Ezekiel chapter 4, I got one or two things I want to say first, or maybe they could wait.
I'll say them first and then I'll start reading Ezekiel 4.
I really have to find a verse first. Okay, I got it. In Ezekiel chapter 3:25, but thou, O son of man, behold, they shall put bands upon thee and shall bind thee with them. And thou shalt not go out among them. And I was thinking, well, when was Ezekiel ever arrested or put in prison? And he wasn't. He wasn't in the entirety of his scripture, of his prophecy. But this is really a reference to what Yahweh is going to have Ezekiel do here in chapter 4, which we'll see. And Yahweh is attributing the need for this to the children of Israel. And that's Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 25. So we postulated about that last week, but when I had glanced at chapter 4 last week, it dawned on me that that was what was being referred to. So we'll see that here in chapter 5. In
Four.
chapter 4, I mean.
All right. Ezekiel chapter 4. Thou also, son of man, take thee a tile and lay it before thee, and portray upon it the city, even Jerusalem, and lay siege against it, and build a fort against it, and cast a mount against it. Set the camp also against it, and set battering rams against it round about. Moreover, take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, and set thy face against it, and it shall be besieged, and thou shalt lay siege against it. This shall be a sign of the house of Israel. Lie thou also upon thy left side, and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it, according to the number of the days that thou shalt lie upon it, thou shalt bear their iniquity. For I have laid upon thee the years of their iniquity, according to the number of the days, 390 days, so shalt thou bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. And when thou hast accomplished them, lie again on thy right side, and thou shalt bear the iniquity of the house of Judah 40 days. I have appointed thee each day for a year. Therefore thou shalt set thy face against the siege of Jerusalem, and thine arm shall be uncovered, and thou shalt prophesy against it. And behold, I will lay bands upon thee, and thou shalt not turn thee from one side to another till thou hast ended the days of thy siege. Take thou also unto thee wheat and barley and beans and lentils and millet and pitches, and put them in one vessel, and make thee bread thereof, according to the number of the days that thou shalt lie upon thy side, 390 days shalt thou eat thereof, and thy meat which thou shalt eat shall be by weight, 20 shekels a day, from time to time shall thou eat it. And you're muted, Bill. But I don't know. In verse 1 there it says, and lay it before thee and portray upon it the city. I don't know what that word portray means there. It looks like portray, but it's got a U in there. So I didn't know what that was.
Well, the U is an archaic English spelling, and I'm surprised y'all still don't use it in Australia.
That's true.
Like color has a U in it, and
Yeah.
theater has the R and the E backwards.
Yeah. So
Savior has a U in it. Well, anyway, portray, that evidently comes from a Hebrew verb meaning to inscribe, engrave, or even cut out, so among other things. So it seems like Ezekiel was supposed to draw a little representation of Jerusalem upon a brick and build a little model, build a fort against it that's a bulwark or a siege wall or a side wall. And that build could be to construct. I mean, that could represent one of the ancient siege engines or something like that, and cast a mount against it. That they were all ancient techniques that they would use, armies would use to attack the wall of a city to violate it and gain entrance to the city to compromise the wall. So that's what this is definitely describing, that Yahweh wanted Ezekiel to actually make this portrayal, this model, if you will, and take thou unto thee an iron pan and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city. So Ezekiel had to go through his motions in order to represent the fact that the city was going to be besieged. And where he was told to lay on his sides, 390 days, the iniquity of the house of Israel seems to be the time ever since they went off after Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, after the passing of Solomon, and he instituted the religion of the golden calves. That was at least 390 years, it seems that could have been 390 years to the time of Ezekiel, but that's a long time. That's longer than the actual period of time as we know it, as I could reckon it in a chronology. 390 years for the iniquity of the house of Israel. Ezekiel is beginning the period of his prophecy probably between 620 and 610 BC, somewhere in there. I think I deduced a closer, more accurate date at the opening remarks I made when we started this in chapter 1. But nevertheless, even if it's 610 BC, 390 years takes you back to 1000 BC. That's not the time of Jeroboam. That's the time of Jeroboam 1. That's the time of David himself, that 390 years, right? That's so evidently the whole time since Israel is a kingdom, that's how the iniquity of the house of Israel is being reckoned. But the iniquity of the house of Judah is only 40 years or 40 days, each day for a year. And these are also some of the passages that I've used to demonstrate that a day in prophecy is a year, represents a year. But those 390 days and those 40 days are evidently the bands that were placed upon Ezekiel, described at the end of chapter 3, that he was bound with, that he was committed to do these things. Make yourself a model of the city and lay on your side for 390 days and then lay on your other side for 40 days. That's, you're going to have bed sores.
Yeah.
That's an onerous task. I mean, Ezekiel had to do it, but it was an onerous task. I don't envy him for that.
I don't understand why he had to act all these things out, whereas other prophets just had to announce things.
Not really, because Hosea was told to go marry a whore and have babies with her.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather probably lay on my side for a few months.
Yeah, same. But there was one bit where I think it was Ezekiel does it in front of the people, like he does something in front of the people, like I think he had to cook his food over cow dung, and this will be a sign of the people, and all the people could see what he is doing. But with this other thing, he's probably lying in his house and no one probably sees any of it, you know. But maybe they knew what he was doing.
Well, it shall be a sign unto the house of Israel. Why also upon thy left side?
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, it does say that, yeah.
That there must be... Well, I mean, we're not told where Ezekiel did this. He was told to take all this food so that he would have food available to him as he did this. And 20 shekels a day, I would think that was a lot of food. Maybe not, but.
Maybe it wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah, it seems that he had plenty of food. 20 shekels a day. I would have to look at comparable prophecies to see how much food could be bought with a shekel, because I know that there are descriptions in here of how much food could be bought with a shekel. Here, Elisha. Now, this is maybe 100 years before Ezekiel. No, probably about 250 years before Ezekiel. In the time of Ahab, maybe in after 900 BC. Tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel and two measures of barley for a shekel. Now, that was cheap because it meant that tomorrow about this time there was going to be plenty, and it was a time of famine.
In the JFB commentary, it says 20 shekels. That is little more than 10 ounces, a scant measure to sustain life. So 10 ounces of food, they're saying.
Okay. So they're interpreting it as being the weight of the food, which is also possible. Yeah, thou shalt eat thy meat, thou shalt eat by weight, 20 shekels a day. Okay, I get it now. Okay, that makes sense now. 20 shekels weight. I would have to see what a shekel weighed, right? I know it's not much. It's really not much. Here it says 220. Here it actually varied whether it was a shekel of gold, silver, or copper in this particular definition, which I'm not sure is correct. It's saying the weight of a shekel varied. So that's giving a value, which is how I initially interpreted it, rather than a particular weight. I would have to study it.
Yeah,
I would lean towards the fact that the commentary is right, though. I would lean towards the fact that the commentary is right.
Yeah, because different materials have different weights, too. So you could get 20 shekels of, and each coin would have a different weight.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of days I live on 10 ounces of food because I've done it. I mean, the other day I ate 4 slices of cheese all day. That was it, because Melissa was sick and I didn't feel like cooking. So 4 slices of cheese was fine. I mean, I don't know if I could do that every day. I'd go nuts if I had to do that every day, and I'd be skinny as hell, too. Probably be good for me, but I don't think I could do it. Did we finish this chapter? No?
No, I'll finish it now. Thou shalt drink also water by measure, the sixth part of an hin from time to time shalt thou drink. And thou shalt eat it as barley cakes, and thou shalt bake it with dung that cometh out of a man in their sight. And Yahweh said, even thus shall the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentile nations, whither I will drive them. Then said I, ah, Yahweh God, behold, my soul hath not been polluted. Far from my youth, up even till now, have I not eaten of that which dieth of itself or is torn to pieces. Neither came their abominable flesh into my mouth. Then he said unto me, lo, I have given thee cow's dung for man's dung, and thou shalt prepare thy bread therewith. Moreover, he said unto me, son of man, behold, I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem, and thou shalt eat bread by weight and with care, and thou shalt drink water by measure and with astonishment, that they may want bread and water and be astonied one with another and consume away for their iniquity. I don't know what astonied means.
Astonished. It's astonished.
And, And so for their sins, they're going to like rot away, consume away.
But this, Ezekiel's told to do this in their sight. So we don't know where he was expected to do this. I don't think the text really indicated that. But it was to be in their sight. So it must have been some place where Ezekiel would be seen by everybody.
And they would be shocked. And he was saying to them, this is what you're going to be like in a few months.
Right. Everybody else here is muted. If anybody wants to say anything, you're more than welcome to contribute.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad Yahweh allowed him to substitute cow's dung.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of little things in the prophets that are trials. But yes, I would have expected that allowance. Kind of surprised he told him to use the dung of a man, but he's using Ezekiel to show the depraved, lowly state of the children of Israel. So it is kind of appropriate. Even though Ezekiel wasn't playing along, it is kind of appropriate. That's all they deserve.
Yeah, because the rest of Israel might not be given the same, benefit that the prophet was. You know, they might be completely depraved, left to, breaking the law and everything like that.
Yeah, well, they were, but they're already also deported at this time. They're already in captivity. Most of Israel and actually a great part of Judah, probably most of Judah, is in captivity by this time by the Assyrians.
So it looks like he was afforded the use of the cow dung rather than the human dung because he had, because he had shown that he was, that he was observant of at least the dietary laws.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no law for what kind of fuel you have to use to cook your food.
Yeah, but the thing is that as far I know that at least as far as like a fertilizer, that human waste and like dog waste is toxic. Whereas other animal waste is fine.
Yeah, it'd be like grass. Cow dung would just be grass. I sort of do see how it would be like cow would be cleaner because their meat's clean, everything from them's clean, whereas you can't eat a man and you can't everything that comes from a man, I do sort of connect it to the dietary law like Martin said.
Yeah, it's a bodily discharge and I would consider unclean to consume. And common sense tells you that you really wouldn't want to use it for anything. But there really is no law against it because you're not consuming it if you're using it as fuel. So I think it's more like a matter of common sense or common decency not to want to use it for fuel.
If I remember correctly, in the dietary laws, that if you use a dish or a pan for cooking and it's had something unclean in it, you're not supposed to use it for the clean food, right?
Well, again, that would be common sense.
Isn't that part of dietary law, though? Like if it touches like a pig or something, you can't use that pan?
I'm sure you'll find laws that suggest that. I don't know if there's anything explicit. If we touch unclean things, we're to wash ourselves and stay out of the camp overnight just for touching like an animal cadaver or something like that or a swine cadaver. So I mean, there are regulations that are similar. I just don't think there's anything explicit. governing what fuels are to be used for heating food. I don't think there is. Even though it would be a matter of common decency that we know that human dung is unclean, so we wouldn't want to use it for that purpose. And it's, I believe it's on that basis that Ezekiel protested. And it's on that basis that he was given mercy and allowed to use cow's dung. Maybe that's there for an example also. I really think the original purpose is to demonstrate that the children of Israel, in their period of punishment, all they deserve is human dung. They don't deserve any better. But Yahweh had mercy on a prophet.
I'll read Ezekiel 5. And thou, son of man, take thee a sharp knife, take thee a barber's razor, and cause it to pass upon thine head and upon thy beard. Then take thee balances to weigh and divide the hair. Thou shalt burn with fire a third part in the midst of the city when the days of the siege are fulfilled, and thou shalt take a third part and smite about it with a knife. And a third part thou shalt scatter in the wind, and I will draw out a sword after them. Thou shalt also take thereof a few in number, and bind them in thy skirts. Then take of them again, and cast them into the midst of the fire, and burn them in the fire, for thereof shall a fire come forth into the house of Israel. Thus saith Yahweh God, this is Jerusalem. I have set it in the midst of the nations and countries that are round about her. And she hath changed my judgments into wickedness more than the nations, and my statutes more than the countries that are round about her. For they have refused my judgments and my statutes, they have not walked in them. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, because ye multiplied more than the nations that are round about you, and have not walked in my statutes, neither have kept my judgments, neither have done according to the judgments of the nations that are round about you. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, behold, I, even I, am against thee, and will execute judgments in the midst of thee in the sight of the nations. And I will do in thee that which I have not done, and whereunto I will not do any more the like, because of all thine abominations. Therefore, the father shall eat the sons in the midst of thee, and the sons shall eat their fathers, and I will execute judgments in thee, and the whole remnant of thee will I scatter into the winds. Wherefore, as I live, saith Yahweh God, surely because thou hast defiled my sanctuary with all thy detestable things and with all thine abominations, therefore will I also diminish thee, neither shall mine eyes spare, neither will I have any pity. A third part of thee shall die with the pestilence and with the famine, shall they be consumed in the midst of thee, and a third part shall fall by the sword round about thee, and I will scatter a third part into all the winds, and I will draw out a sword after them. Thus shall my anger be accomplished, and I will cause my fury to rest upon them, and I will be comforted, and they shall know that I, Yahweh, have spoken it in my zeal, when I have accomplished my fury in them.
I forget where it was, and I wanted to go back and look. In Jeremiah, as we read Jeremiah, it was stated that the people of Judah that Yahweh favored were actually the people that were taken in the first captivity, the 10,000 princes, when Jeconiah and his sons were taken into captivity, the Babylonians took 10,000 princes, and they were the people that Yahweh favored. Those 10,000 princes were actually spared this siege of Jerusalem, which happened 9 years later. They really were. And they were all probably, and as far as we could tell from the book of Daniel, they were all pretty much established in Babylon when this siege of Jerusalem happened 9 years later. Or maybe it was 11 years later, but I think it was 9. Well, these people here, except for the few that Ezekiel was told to bind in his skirts, a few of the hairs, the rest of these people are going to suffer greatly in a siege, and there's going to be no mercy on them. Even the ones that escape the city are going to be chased with the sword, as this explains here. So it seems like the all of the people that were taken captive at this time, even they were ill-fated, except for those few that are described as being bound in his skirts, that Yahweh would watch over a few. The eating of one's own offspring. I mean, we've seen that in the sieges elsewhere in Scripture. And in prophecy.
Could that be metaphorical too? Like people, you know how they were devouring widows' houses in the New Testament? Like that means that you'd like robbing them. And like so sons could be like robbing their dad and their dad could be taking advantage of their son. I don't know.
I think some of the language in various places about mothers and fathers eating their children during times of siege should probably be taken literally.
Yeah.
The ancient world was actually a much crueler world than we've experienced in the post-Christian world is actually, in my opinion, a much more loving and kind world. Even when we depart from God, we still have those Christian values. The ancient world was a lot more cruel and colder. I mean, today people could get abortions because they see it as a medical procedure. And that they think that it's okay because the baby's not born yet. It's not really a person yet. Back then, they would take children that were months old and think nothing about sacrificing them to Moloch. It was a much colder world, in my opinion. A much more
hot. Yeah, I think so.
Excuse my ignorance, but is this all like part of the divorce, or could that not happen? It seems like it has already happened, right?
Well, I mean, the divorce is a process, right? And it's happening. It's already guaranteed to happen, but it's happening.
Once they're put out of Jerusalem in captivity, isn't that like the wife being put out of the house?
Right. That's when it becomes officially a thing of the past, a done deal, so to speak, in my opinion. But it has been announced.
Yeah, so, I think it is like a process too. Sorry, Bill.
It has been announced, but it may as well be. So it may as well be done, but it's not quite done until the city's destroyed and they're in captivity. So this is the divorce process.
I think Herb Nurse had a question. I think we actually answered it, though. Is the laying on the left and right side symbolic or literal? And we say it's like literal.
Oh, yeah. I really believe that Ezekiel was compelled to do that.
In the sight of all the people. It even says in this chapter 5 that he's doing it in the sight of the people.
Yes.
I might finish his chapter.
Usually, usually in the ancient world, when something was to be done before all the people, that meant that it was to be done at the market gate of the city. right? Because that was where most people trafficked to go back and forth to the markets. So I mean, that's a guess, but I would say that Ezekiel must have done this in that vicinity in order to be seen by everybody. That's my opinion. We're not told where he did it, though. Not that I've seen thus far.
Yeah, he's really killing the vibe at markets, isn't he? You're going there to buy your flour and food, and then there's prophet there doing all this. You know, they would have been astonished.
Right, then they would have, but they also probably would have recognized Ezekiel. They certainly would have recognized him as a prophet.
Moreover, I will make thee waste and a reproach among the nations that are round about thee in the sight of all that pass by. So it shall be a reproach and a taunt, an instruction and an astonishment unto the nations that are round about thee, when I shall execute judgments in the anger and fury and in fury and in furious rebukes. I, Yahweh, have spoken it. When I shall send upon them the evil arrows of famine, which shall be for their destruction, and which I will send to destroy you, and I will increase the famine upon you, and will break your staff of bread. So will I send upon you famine and evil beast, and they shall bereave thee, and pestilence and blood shall pass through thee, and I will bring the sword upon thee. I, Yahweh, have spoken it.
Well, here what Ezekiel was told to do with his hair is interpreted, right? A third of his hair was to be burned with fire. A third of his hair was to be chased with a sword. A third of his hair was to be scattered in the wind, and a sword would go after it. But some of it would be placed in his skirt, meaning that it would be protected. And here at the end, we don't really see that portion, but it's nevertheless there. In the actual prophecy of the hair. At the beginning of the chapter.
And you've got these evil beasts, Bill. And, you know, I will send upon you famine and evil beasts. Well, did Yahweh make any evil beasts? Now I'm thinking that these aren't beasts that Yahweh made, eh?
Well, yeah, I mean, beasts are evil in the eyes of man when a lion is a noble animal, but when you get confronted with one alone in the jungle, your ass is probably in trouble, right? So it's evil to you. That don't mean that the lion's evil to God.
Yeah, I see. It could be like, you know, that verse in Isaiah which says, I create evil, and it's like these punishments that are coming upon us seem evil to man, but to God, it's a righteous judgment.
Right.
That sort of evil.
Right.
That's still, do you think some of these evil beasts could have been like non-white people coming in and spoiling the nation?
Yeah, you know, there were some Canaanites among the Babylonians and the Edomites and other bastard races were definitely mercenaries or subject to Babylon and conscripted, right? Because that's the way empires worked. If you were a subject king, you had to supply so many divisions of men whenever the empire went to war. And that would have been the case here. And that's why the Edomites were here with the Babylonians and destroyed the temple. But I will send upon you famine and evil beasts, and they shall bereave thee. And I think that's just, in the context of famine, I think that's just a reference to the fact that when these people are fleeing, they're defenseless against animals. I mean, they have nothing to defend themselves with, and they're going to suffer, even when they don't suffer from opposing forces, they're going to suffer from the forces of nature.
Wild animals.
Yes.
All right, chapter 6. Ezekiel bread, if you've ever made it and eaten it. Oh, yeah, I see. Just reading a comment there. All right, chapter 6.
That's like sprouted bread that's only sold frozen, I think.
Yeah, I've seen that. Ezekiel bread.
I have too, but I don't eat very much bread. I eat extremely little bread. It gives me reflux.
I love bread. Spelt bread. Bread, oh, I make myself.
I used to love bread until I started getting reflux.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So we actually buy a mix of Ezekiel mix and we make the bread from it. It's really, like, if you ate a piece of it, you wouldn't be hungry all day. So I just thought that was kind of interesting in chapter 4 that they were talking about eating Ezekiel bread, which makes sense that you could buy something really nutritious for maybe a little bit of money and be full.
Is your bread, though, the sprouted bread, or is it just Ezekiel flour?
Well, it's a mixture of, like, beans and different grains.
Oh, okay.
And then you mill it, and you use that as the flour for the bread.
Yeah, so because it's got so many different, like, grains in it and beans, it's, like, really nutritious.
Right.
And the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face toward the mountains of Israel and prophesy against them, and say, Ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of Yahweh God. Thus saith Yahweh God to the mountains and to the hills, to the rivers and to the valleys, Behold, I, even I, will bring a sword upon you, and I will destroy your high places, and your altars shall be desolate, and your images be broken. And I will cast down your slain men before your idols, and I will lay the dead carcasses of the children of Israel before their idols, and I will scatter your bones round about your altars. In all your dwelling places, the cities shall hide, shall be laid waste, and the high places shall be desolate, that your altars may be laid waste and made desolate, and your idols may be broken and cease, and your images may be cut down, and your works may be abolished. And the slain shall fall in the midst of you, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. Yet will I leave a remnant, that ye may have some that shall escape the sword among the nations, when ye shall be scattered through the countries. And they that escape of you shall remember me among the nations, whither they shall be carried captives, because I am broken with their whorish heart, with which hath departed from me, and with their eyes which go a whoring after their idols, and they shall loathe themselves the evil which they have committed in all their abominations. And they shall know that I am Yahweh, and that I have not said in vain that I would do this evil unto them. Thus saith Yahweh God, smite with thine hand, and stamp with thy foot, and say, Alas, for all the evil abominations of the house of Israel, for they shall fall by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. He that is afar off shall die of the pestilence, and he that is near shall die by shall fall by the sword. And he that remaineth is besieged shall die by the famine. Thus will I accomplish my fury upon them. Then shall ye know that I am Yahweh, when their slain men shall be among their idols round about their altars, upon every high hill, in all the tops of the mountains, and upon every green tree, and upon every thick oak, the place where they did offer sweet savour to all their idols. So will I stretch out my hand upon them, and make the land desolate, yeah, more desolate than the wilderness towards Diblath, and all their habitations, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. You're muted, Bill.
Yeah, thanks. I always forget. In the days of Josiah became king around 640 BC, and he lived until 608 BC. He was king for about 32 years. We're sometime after 608 BC right now. Because Ezekiel was he was actually a hostage. He's in Babylon. He was in that first captivity. That's when he began prophesying sometime after that. he was in that first captivity. I forgot this at the beginning tonight when I first started to try to date Ezekiel. He was in that first captivity when Zedekiah was made king, and Jehoiakim, I think, or Jehoiachin, and his sons were carried away captive to Babylon. I think it was Jehoiachin. And Jehoiachin was put in captivity. He had only been the king for about 9 or 10 months or something like that after he succeeded his father. And Zedekiah, I think, was his uncle. And Zedekiah was the last king. And now, of course, we're well into the period of Zedekiah with Ezekiel. Ezekiel, I'm wrong. Ezekiel's not doing this in Jerusalem. He's doing this by the river Kabar among the captives of Judah. Are all by the river Kabar. So he made this model of the city by the river Kabar so that all the captives of Judah could see him do this. That's where this is going on. And I should have probably realized that a little earlier this evening. I don't get my head straight before these Bible studies. I'm sorry. Well, when Josiah became king, there was a revival, and they actually removed idols from the temple in Jerusalem when Josiah was king. And there's a lot of talk about groves, but those groves are actually these Asherah idols, which are some sort of Baal image. And they worshiped these images and conducted their pagan Baal rituals around these images, which must have included sexual acts and things like that. So now Josiah is dead since 608 BC, and now it's not more than 15 years later, and we see that all these images are back. It doesn't take long for people to regress once the once a more suppliant a softer or more corrupt ruler comes along. It doesn't take long for the people to follow down the same path of idolatry once again. So we see in Ezekiel, and in Ezekiel chapter 34, groves will be mentioned. I believe it's, no, it's not. I'm wrong. They're not mentioned in Ezekiel. I had the wrong passage in mind. But here, where idols are mentioned and worshiping under every green tree and under every thick oak, that's back to the Baal worship and the groves, and those idols must have been put up in Jerusalem once again, as they had been in the time of Josiah.
In verse 9, it says, "And they that escape of you shall remember me among the nations." Is that, would you sort of connect that to Isaiah, where they've got the sign among the nations? So these people are like witnessing Yahweh. He sent a sign among the nations.
You know, the people must have remembered the temple in Jerusalem in captivity for at least quite some time. At least long enough to know that they were sent off into punishment. And especially once they must have heard it was destroyed. And not all of the Israelites had left Mesopotamia by this time. There were still a lot of them in Mesopotamia for quite some time.
Like, some people say the sign among the nations is Christ, because obviously I do think that's true, but also, like, Yahweh did send a sign before Christ among the nations. And, like, these captives, this remnant going among the nations, and they believed in Yahweh, you know, I think that could have been a sign too.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I would agree with that.
And in verse 6, it says, "And your works may be abolished." Would you connect that to something like what Paul's writing, where he's talking about good works and bad works? So, like, if all they're doing is founded upon idolatry, that means all their works are like burned in the fire, like what Paul's talking about. But if you have Yahweh as your God, you will have some sort of reward.
Yeah, well, anything that went along with their images and their idolatry and their altars, and that was all the pagan fertility rituals and everything else they did, yeah, their works would be abolished. That took some time, though. I don't think that happened at all until the Christian era.
What do you mean? That all their bad works were abolished?
As far as the people that Jeremiah that Ezekiel is witnessing to, that's different, right? But here he's speaking, Yahweh is speaking through the prophet of the people of Judah who are about to suffer these punishments, and the mountains of Israel, which, in my opinion, are the captivity of Israel, that they're being told these things, and that this, what's about to happen with Judah, would be a sign sent among them. That, yeah, that would be like a call to repentance. But it's also a warning that they're going to continue to be punished. In verse 11, you have, "For the evil abominations of the house of Israel, they shall fall by the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence." So these warnings in this chapter are to all of Israel, even those already in captivity, in my opinion. I mean, the Israelites in captivity were still in a state of idolatry. They didn't depart from their idolatry simply because they went into captivity.
That's pretty incredible. You'd think they'd realize, like, oh, everything that they said would happen to us is happening to us. We better change. We better repent, because it's obvious that God's true now. Oh, should I read? I'm going to do one more chapter, Bill.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, good. "Moreover, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Also, thou son of man, thus saith Yahweh God unto the land of Israel, the end is come upon the four corners of the land. Now is the end come upon thee, and I will send mine anger upon thee, and will judge thee according to thy ways, and will recompense upon thee all thine abominations. And mine eye shall not spare thee, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense thy ways upon thee, and thine abominations shall be in the midst of thee, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh God, an evil, an only evil, behold, is come. An end is come. The end is come. It watcheth for thee. Behold, it is come. The morning is come unto thee, O thou that dwellest in the land. The time is come. The day of trouble is near, and not the sounding again of the mountains. Now will I shortly pour out my fury upon thee, and accomplish mine anger upon thee, and I will judge thee according to thy ways, and will recompense thee for all thine abominations. And mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. I will recompense thee according to thy ways, and thine abominations that are in the midst of thee. And ye shall know that I am Yahweh that smiteth." Hold on.
Well, it's just a continuation of the prophecy against the mountains of Israel in the last chapter, right? It's just continuing that. But now the end has come upon thee. That's speaking not necessarily to Israel in captivity. That's speaking to the people in Jerusalem. And there are Israelites in other places in Judah that they kind of spread back out after the Assyrian siege, that they didn't stay contained in Jerusalem. They spread back to quite a few of the other cities. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, so the end is the end of Jerusalem.
I believe that's a warning that it's the end of Jerusalem, yes.
At verse 5, it says, an evil, an only evil, behold, is come. What's an only evil? I haven't had time to check.
Yeah, you know, it's a single evil, I think. It actually literally, the word only means one. A single evil in a sense that it's a notable evil is how I would interpret that. Notable, special, like one of a kind evil.
That's sort of what the NASB says, a unique evil. That's how they translated it.
Yeah, that's probably how I would do it too.
I like how he says, I am Yahweh that smiteth.
Yes.
He's mean sometimes.
Yeah, this has to be against the Jerusalem. So perhaps verse 6, it is only against the people that are still in Israel, but that there are things there that seem to mean, that seem to indicate a wider context of all Israel. Like the ensign, the sign being sent among them, and things like that.
Well, wasn't it the end of kingdom? So that's the end of the that particular covenant, sort of, because you know they would have a kingdom. So as long as they took kept those conditional part of the promise, whereas they broke that conditional part, so they lose the kingdom, but there's still the unconditional part of the promise.
Well, the unconditional parts of the promise were made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not to the Israelites at Sinai. The kingdom was predicated upon the fact that the children of Israel promised to be obedient at Sinai. Simply because they were disobedient and they lost their kingdom, that doesn't mean that the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are annulled. They're not annulled. And that's what Paul said in Galatians chapter 3, where he said that the law, which came 430 years after the promises to Abraham, doesn't annul the promises to Abraham. That the promises to Abraham are unconditional and forever. So what the children of Israel lost in the deportations and the divorce was the kingdom. But they didn't lose the promises that were made to their fathers, because those promises were unconditional. Only the kingdom was conditional. Only the Levitical covenant was conditional, the Sinai covenant. But the New Testament isn't founded upon the Sinai covenant. The New Testament is founded upon the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's what even a lot of CI people make a serious mistake not understanding that.
It's interesting, Bill, that the first kingdom was sort of conditional, but because Christ can't fail, the kingdom that's coming is sort of unconditional. It's inevitable and it's forever.
Yes, because God can't fail, but men can. But he keeps his promises. In spite of man.
I'll read from verse 10. Behold the day, behold it is come. The morning is gone forth. The rod hath blossomed, pride hath budded. Violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness. None of them shall remain, nor of their multitude, nor of any of theirs. Neither shall there be wailing for them. The time is come, the day draweth near. Let the buyer rejoice, nor the seller mourn. For wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. For the seller shall not return to that which is sold, although they were yet alive. For the vision is touching the whole multitude thereof, which shall not return, neither shall any strengthen himself in the iniquity of his life. They have blown the trumpet, even to make all ready, but none goeth to the battle, for my wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. The sword is without, and the pestilence and the famine within. He that is in the field shall die with the sword, and he that is in the city, famine and pestilence shall devour him. But they that escape of them shall escape, and shall be on the mountains like doves of the valley, all of them mourning, every one for his iniquity. And hands shall be feeble, and all their knees shall be weak as water. They shall also gird themselves with sackcloth, and horror shall cover them, and shame shall be upon all faces, and baldness upon all their heads. They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of Yahweh. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither shall their bowels, because it is the stumbling block of their iniquity. So them, you know, seeking to fill their bowels, that is the stumbling block of their iniquity. So that's why they stumbled. Oh, Bill, you're muted again.
That's always a problem whenever men do it. And that's what people usually look to do first, is fill their own bowels. Whenever there's a tragedy or a time of trouble.
Isn't that what Esau did?
Yes, and there are probably many other examples of it, even if I don't come up with one right away, but this silver and gold will not be able to deliver them. And what are people sold today? And people on the right, the far right, and all these outlets that basically sell half-truths to people who foresee calamity are being sold silver and gold. And it's not going to do them a damn bit of good when the time comes, because nobody with food is going to want to part with their food for silver or gold. Your silver and gold aren't going to do you any good. So I mean, we should be able to understand the past and apply it to our lives today. But we don't. As collectively, we don't.
You know, I'm thinking of that thing that Christ said, where he's like, they who seek to keep their lives shall lose it.
Right.
And they, you know, I can't remember and you know, they who, you know, give their lives to God, they'll preserve their life, basically.
Right, they who would lose their lives shall find them. If you have no care for your own life and you seek to love your brethren, edify your brethren, and not spend your time storing up earthly treasure for yourself, then you'll be a lot better off and actually have a much better survival rate.
Because God, it'll be God delivering you temporal salvation, which is better than silver and gold.
Right.
All Alright, I'll read verse 20 then.
Yes, that's fine. And I'll be back momentarily. I'll be right back. I'll listen to you as you read.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. As for the beauty of his ornament, he set it in majesty, but they made the images of their abominations and of their detestable things therein. Therefore have I set it far from them, and I will give it into the hands of the strangers for a prey, and to the wicked of the earth for a spoil, and they shall pollute it. My face will I turn also from them, and they shall pollute my secret place, for the robbers shall enter into it and defile it. Make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence. Wherefore I will bring the worst of the heathen, and they shall possess their houses. I will also make the pomp of the strong to cease, and their holy places shall be defiled. Destruction cometh, and they shall seek peace, and there shall be none. Mischief shall come upon mischief, and rumor be upon rumor. Then shall they seek a vision of the prophet, but the law shall perish from the priest, and counsel from the ancients. The king shall mourn, and the prince shall be clothed with desolation, and the hands of the people of the land shall be troubled. I will do unto them after their way, and according to their deserts will I judge them, and they shall know that I am Yahweh.
Like I said at the beginning, we don't know where Ezekiel did this, but at the beginning of his prophecy, he was by the river Kabar among the captives, and since he wasn't, that there's no indication that he was told to go to Jerusalem, he might still be at the river Kabar by the captives. But when the prophets were given these words, they were expected to announce these words through the people. Say, thus saith Yahweh God unto the land of Israel. But somehow the people in Jerusalem, in my opinion, must have gotten these messages from the prophet. Go and speak unto the house of Israel at the beginning of verse 3. So did Ezekiel go to Jerusalem or not? I think that's difficult to tell. That they were, I mean, he was with the captives at Kabar, and they could be considered the house of Israel, but it may be that he actually went to Jerusalem. It seems that that possibility is there. But then in verse 11 in chapter 3, we read, and go get thee to them of the captivity and unto the children of thy people, and speak unto them. So it seems that Ezekiel stayed among the captivity and only spoke to them. And I don't remember anything else that might indicate that he went to Jerusalem. At chapter 4, he was told to make a portrait of Jerusalem on a brick. So he must have done all this in front of the captivity. But somehow I would think that these prophecies would have had to get back to the people in Jerusalem. I mean, that's my opinion. I can't prove that either way right now at this point in Ezekiel. But Ezekiel's telling the people of the captivity what's going to happen to Jerusalem. And I'm sure they understand it, because I'm sure they understand the political situation at the time, and that the king that the Nebuchadnezzar put in place of Jeconiah, which is Zedekiah, is actually rebelling against him, which is going to cause the Nebuchadnezzar to come and destroy the city. That political situation must have been understood. So Ezekiel's making these announcements to these people of the captivity that Jerusalem's gone. It's going to be destroyed. And the words must have had a great impact at that time. But you also had Jeremiah in Jerusalem prophesying to them at the very same time. And that's when they put Jeremiah in prison, is during this period of time right here. Give or take a couple of years, right? The next chapter says, and it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth day of the month, I sat in mine house. So he's still in captivity. And the elders of Judah sat before me, which must be the elders of Judah that were taken into captivity with him, in that captivity of the 10,000 princes. So Ezekiel chapter 1 starts in the fifth year of King Jehoiachin's captivity, when Jehoiachin was taken to Babylon and replaced with Zedekiah. And now it's Ezekiel chapter 8, and it's the sixth year in the sixth month. And that must also be a reference to Jehoiachin's captivity. So all these last seven chapters of Ezekiel unfolded over that period of a year and a half between Ezekiel chapter 1. It's not even a year and a half. It's in the fifth. What I have here, the fifth year. In the fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of Jehoiachin's captivity, but we're not told really how many months. So it could be any time during the fifth year. Now it's the halfway through the sixth year. So it's give or take a year since Ezekiel began prophesying, and Ezekiel chapter 8 commences. A year, give or take a few months, either way, we can't really tell. But 390 days and 40 days seems to be over by this point. So that's how Ezekiel spent that year and however long, year and however many months it was. Days and 40 days would be about a year and 3 months. Which could add up. That's fine.
Well, just reading verse 27, I just realized what the saying "get their just desserts" means, because desserts is apparently an archaic word which means what you deserve. I did not know that. I thought when people said they're just desserts, I always imagined like a dessert, and I didn't really understand. Man.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought people would have understood that.
No, I didn't. I don't get, sometimes I'm not very, I'm not a very wordy person, very literal, you know. So I never understood that saying until just now.
Oh, wow.
Bit silly. I'm a bit silly, okay. But yeah.
I mean, I always thought people took that for, I always took it for granted that people understood that.
Desserts? Yeah, I never knew it was an archaic word. I never knew that. Archaic word that means what you deserve.
Yeah, there, but it's only used in a good sense today, and usually of dinner time, right? It's kind of silly, I know, but we also all, I mean, I've always heard the term "get your just desserts," and to me, that's what you're worthy of, whether you, it's good or evil. So that's how I always
sort of.
Even though we use the term dessert to be some treat after we eat dinner or whatever, I've always understood the phrase in that context to mean whatever you're worthy of, whether it's good or evil.
I sort of got that aspect of it, but I just did not know dessert. I always imagine like dessert as in the treat after dinner. I'm thinking, you know, that's a bit strange, but now I get it. It's silly, I know, but it happens to me all the time. Someone will be using a saying, and I just never get these sayings. Hey, little.
I think there's probably a lot of that in our modern culture. I really do. That we take so hear something, take it for granted, and never really examine what it means.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a bit of a dumbass sometimes.
No, I don't think it's you. I think it's everybody. Words get disconnected from their original meaning pretty easily in pop culture, especially. Gay. Rap. No. There's probably a ton of words that are more important than those which are disconnected from their original meanings.
Yeah, I imagine they would be. And I should have investigated stuff like that, but I just never did because I don't use a lot of sayings myself. I just hear other people saying, I'm like, yeah, I sort of get what you mean. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, well, that's what most people do. You know what it means colloquially, so that's all you care about.
Yeah, a bit lazy.
Never look under the surface. Well, I don't know if there's anything else we have to talk about in Channel 7, in Chapter 7. It's basically a pretty graphic description of the coming punishment on Jerusalem. I don't know if much more needs to be said about it.
Oh, did you want to read Chapter 8, Bill?
No, I think that's good for this evening. That's four chapters. I don't want to make Martin too excited. And chapter 8's pretty long.
Yeah.
Oh. Is it? No, it's short. No, I'm looking at the wrong box in Bible Works. Yeah, it's not that long, but that's okay. We could save it for next week.
Yeah, I thought that's why what we were doing. That's why I sort of went off topic.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to cut this recording here. I don't know if anybody wants to add anything first or say anything. I'll count down to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Nope, guess not. Thank you. It's like all these people here and nobody wants to talk. That's okay. Stop recording.